cultural organizations, institutions can't survive without volunteers and without donations by the people who use them. My husband, being the conservative person that he was, he would say, well, you know, the ticket price should, the people who want to use that pay for it. You know, I said, well, it never works that way, though. It would mean that the arts are just for the rich, rich, rich people, and it should be for everyone. Well, the only way it's going to be for everyone is that they have volunteers and that they have contributors. So I think that we help people to understand that our community is the wonderful community that it is because of people who have given a lot to it. Whether it was Mr. Lilly and the Lilly family who made so many things possible in this community, or some of the new people who are enriching our lives and our community. But there are hundreds of thousands of people who have done that through the years and who have made this a quality place to live because they've been willing to give of their time and money. So that's the message that we always tried to get across. We talked about specific nonprofit organizations that maybe some people hadn't heard much about that were social service kinds of things. We didn't just talk about the big ones and the big popular ones. We tried to... we would focus every month. We would have the executive director of the month, and then we would talk about what they did in their job, and we would, you know, so it gave people the opportunity to have an insight into a lot of nonprofit organizations instead of maybe one if they were involved in one.
I don't want this question to sound too much like an exam question, but what do you think philanthropy is based on all the years that you've been involved in it?
Well, for me, philanthropy means a giving of my time and money, my resources, to improve the quality of life for people.
Let's see, between 1997 and 98, you were the owner and publisher of Issues in Business.
Yes.
What was that?
Well, these my husband had been involved in business publications, and he had been involved in two business magazines, this one in Indianapolis and one in Columbus, Ohio. And
just, what was the name of the one?
CEO magazine. And actually, Issues in Business was started as CEO in Indianapolis, and then they changed the name to Issues in Business. And through some things that happened in the business, I ended up having to manage those as well as the register, and so you know they had a whole different orientation.
You're also listed on your resume as owner and publisher of Metro Magazines.
Well, that was Metro Magazines was then the three publications,
okay, I see.
Right?
Okay.
The parent company.
Well, I had a bunch of questions I was going to ask you about media, but we got yes. to that already. So I'd like to spend the rest of the time that we have talking about your philanthropic activities. You came to the attention of the organizers of this pilot project because of your experience in fundraising and your experience as a volunteer. And I'll just note for the record that you gave $1 million to Purdue University to establish a center for families in 1993. When you look back at well over a decade of significant philanthropic work, what is it that you're most proud of? What really makes you feel good about the work that you did have done?
Well, I mentioned some of the fundraisers that I started that are still going on. But one thing I am very proud of was when I was president of the board of trustees of Meals on Wheels, that I created the concept of corporate volunteers. And I felt that the organization was going to have trouble surviving if they didn't expand their volunteer base beyond retired people or people who were available during the day. And so I created this concept of corporate volunteers, and I predicted that eventually there would be a lot more corporate volunteers than there were other kind. And it was very exciting this past year when I was invited to a recognition event where they recognize the corporate volunteers and the quite lengthy list of companies that deliver Meals on Wheels. And so I'm very proud of that because this is what I call hands-on volunteering. And there aren't very many opportunities for that. This is where you, I call it immediate gratification. So for the person who delivers a meal to a shut-in, that person wouldn't eat that day if you weren't handing them the meal. And this is true of volunteer activity with children's organizations or our sick people in hospices, that kind of thing. Hands-on volunteer where you get this immediate gratification of seeing what you do affecting another person or people. Most of our volunteering and most of what I have been involved in is fundraising in a huge way, which I don't see the end result. Now, I do when I go to the Art Museum and see the Fine Museum, and I do when I go to the Symphony and see the quality there, or to the IRT and what a role I've played there. You know, I was president of the Arts Council here. So I feel very good about that. But in my social services side, to know the impact that I had with Girls Incorporated, and I was on the national board, and the fine work that they do in helping girls be brave and strong, and smart, brave, and strong, which goes back to my days in 4-H of understanding what it means to have adults spend time with young people. And my work with health organizations, understanding that we aren't all well all the time, and that we have to assist health organizations, and particularly because my mother had Alzheimer's disease, I've been somewhat involved in that organization. But with I've been involved with many health organizations and with Methodist Hospital. But because I see the big picture, that it takes all these things to make a fine community to live in. And the same way I feel, of course, very strongly about education. And I'm very excited that I had the opportunity and the wherewithal to make that gift to Purdue. It was interesting that until I made that gift, the most I had ever given to Purdue in all those years was $250 in 1 year. But it was also interesting, if you look at the list of all my awards from Purdue.
So you were not on the list of potential $1 million donors.
No. If you look at all the awards that I received from Purdue, there's this long list here starting in 1972. Mm-hmm. I barely had three nickels to rub together at that point. And yet I received the Distinguished Home Economics Alumni Award based on my service in leadership as an alum. The Old Master in 72, and it goes on and on, 79 and 81, and da-da-da-da-da. So,
which preceded your gift to the university.
Yes, and the point is that Purdue valued the leadership that I brought to them, that I could be this mentor, that I could be this example of this career woman who had succeeded long before women were doing that kind of thing and could come back and speak to young women at Purdue and say, here's what it takes, you know. And so when, and they didn't ask me for this money. That's the interesting thing. I was serving, I was one of two women in the country on the Vision 21 campaign, which was Purdue's first big effort to raise big money. And I walked in the first day to the meeting, and here are all these CEOs who flew in their private jets from all over the country for this meeting. And here I am, I drove over from Indianapolis, you know, and I'm thinking, what am I doing here, you know? But again, you know, I'm used to starting at the bottom and figuring it out. And so as we went through those meetings, and I began to understand and to grasp what we were trying to accomplish, I began to see that the men would come into the meetings and they would say, well, my company will do this, and we will provide the, IBM will provide the computers, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, another company, well, and my company will do so-and-so. Never once did I hear one of those men say, I personally, out of my pocket, will give this amount of money to Purdue. And so I had been involved with all the work that I had done at Purdue in the home ec school, which became Consumer and Family Sciences. I had worked for, oh gosh, a year and a half, maybe 2 years, in kind of a study group about the concept of a center for families. We didn't call it exactly that, but that there was a need for something like that. But then it didn't happen because a couple of the professors who were involved in it retired, and there wasn't any money for it. And so one day I was attending a very first time event at Purdue for women donors or potential donors in the School of Consumer and Family Sciences. And they had a leader there, and we did an exercise called If You Were Going to Give $1 Million to Consumer and Family Sciences or to Purdue, how would you want it used? This was just an exercise, and all of a sudden it all came together for me that all my life, everything good that had happened in my life had to do with my home ec class, my 4-H, that mentor teacher, going to Purdue, becoming a home ec teacher, which led me then to all the wonderful career things. And I realized that I needed to step forward as a donor, just as I've stepped forward all my life, to show women how to be a donor at Purdue. And so I...
And was that one of your goals in giving that donation, to show
yes.
women how to do this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And always the teacher. And so at the break, I told the woman who had organized this that I had figured out what to do with $1 million, and I was going to give $1 million to establish the Center for Families. And she thought I was just doing the exercise. And I said, well, no, I'm serious. And I said, well, I'm going to discuss it with my husband when I get home this evening, but that's what I'd like to do. And so we set it up so that in that first year, that any person who made a pledge of $10,000 or more in that first year of when we were establishing the center would be a charter donor, and they could pay that pledge over a 10-year period. Well, $1,000 a year is fairly doable for people, and it also then put them into the donor base at a university of $1,000 donor, which at Purdue is the President's Council, so you have the benefits of that. And so we ended up with over 40 donors, but many of them were much more than $10,000. So that's why I didn't put my name on it, is because I wanted everyone that gave to feel that it was very inclusive, that it was everyone's. And in the 7 years of its life, it has done absolutely phenomenal things. And this fall, when we go back for our meetings, they will actually see that we have a space, we have offices, we have a staff, and we just received an $8 million grant from the U.S. government to study family life on military bases throughout the world.
So this is the Defense Department, yeah, right?
Yeah. And so this is very exciting. But you see, it allowed me to, and this is what we know about female donors. They give in a very personal way. Okay, this was a very emotional thing for me. This was my whole life laid out there, and this was a way to bring it together of all that had happened. And so much of my life had to do with the Extension Service out of Purdue as being a land-grant college, and the home ec. And so this was my way to, and many donors like to say give back, mm-hmm. but it was my way to express my appreciation for what all of that had meant to me.
So you think there are significant differences in motivation between male and female donors?
Absolutely, yes. And men give in a whole different way. Men give to the sports program at the school. If a couple is giving, they give to the man's school, and they may give to sports, and the woman may not participate at all in her school. Yes, men have different expectations about how their involvement after they've given the gift. Women want to know how the money is being used. They want to they're much more inclined to give to children's things, to female type of things, to family kind of things. They want to stay involved. They want to hear the warm, fuzzy stories, and they have to be motivated in a different way, too. And so I've become involved in that now, and gave a speech at the University of Tennessee on the title of my speech was Why I Gave $1 Million at Purdue, because they are starting now, and other universities are starting to understand that women have the capability of giving major gifts, but nobody has asked them, because they asked the couple. Mm-hmm. And so my job there as the opening speaker was to say, you will find it very gratifying to give money in your name to your special interests, and here's why. And here is what it did for me.
So your audience was potential female donors?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. And the way they sorted them was that they took couple gifts and gave her credit for half of it. Mm-hmm. So they had 75 women there, mm-hmm. I think, and they had to have given more than $25,000 a year. The University of Tennessee, and so it was very exciting to be a part of that as they started that concept at that.
So, university. How do you motivate potential female donors as opposed to potential male donors?
By telling my story, mm-hmm. about what that meant to me, mm-hmm. and what it means to at my age, I'm 66 right now, and so this has been going on for 7 years. So. That I've had the opportunity to watch this grow and to see the huge contribution it's making now all over the world. And it's going to be so much bigger and better than I ever could have visualized when it started. And so I feel that people need to give money when they're alive so that they can feel the joy. And it's so much more than having someone recognize and say, oh, you gave $1 million. That's not it at all. And a lot of people don't even want their name on it. But I felt that I needed to come forward and say, this is a good thing for women to do. And you can do it too, even if it's at $10,000. And so actually what ended up, going back to that Vision 21 committee, that some of the men on that committee, actually the man and the wife, gave a contribution to the Center for Families, which was very gratifying to me.
Do you think that Purdue University was able to capitalize on what they might have learned from
Absolutely.
Your donation, and in what ways?
Steve Bering, the president, talked about Purdue as a family. I really put a focus on family. And it had tremendous publicity because it was such a new concept. And so the university throughout, I could see in many ways, they were beginning to understand that Purdue had the capability of taking a leadership role as far as families because of the extension service out of there and home ec teachers and so forth. But from the top administration down, they saw the importance, and they really had not been supportive of this first event that this woman had in Consumer and Family Sciences, the development person, Cheryl Altenkammer. They just thought it was kind of a silly idea. Well, of course, she has one every year now, and they see the amount of money that has been raised. Well, now we're into plan giving, and millions of dollars are coming in through trusts and so forth, you know, that will come later. Mm-hmm. And so... it got their attention because they'd just not done anything like that before. And I was a high-profile person anyway, you know, and so that helped.
I want to back way up and ask you a question about Meals on Wheels. I actually drove for Meals on Wheels in Stillwater, Oklahoma. I know what you're talking about, the gratification.
Yeah.
But you talked about the good corporate volunteers. Was this a program where corporations released their employees to drive or encourage mm-hmm. them, or how did that work?
Actually, the corporation signs up and agrees to do certain things. And so they decide whether it's a dental practice of two people or a corporation of thousands of employees. They decide how many days a month they're going to drive, that they are going to be responsible for. And then they have kind of, it's not a contract, but an agreement with Meals on Wheels of how many days they're going to be responsible for delivering. And then they assign an internal person that will make sure that that happens. Where with regular volunteers, there has to be a person at the Meals on Wheels office that's trying to fill in all the time when a volunteer calls and says, well, my mother's sick and I can't drive today. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got to find somebody because these people won't have anything to eat if you don't. And so it freed up the office, you know, to not have to take all those calls because the corporation was responsible. And then internally, they would have a sign-up sheet for people. And so whoever volunteered, then they would be released for 2 hours at noon to do that, which they're using 1 hour of their own lunchtime, mm-hmm. and then the company gives them the other hour. And they use their own car and their own gas. And so at this one company, it was an insurance company, they had so many people sign up. They had to take the sign-up sheet down after a day because they had so many people that some of them would only drive once a year, you know. And so it was very successful because, and then even the president of the company would sign up to be one of the drivers. And so it brought a company, you know, the top people together with other people to in a unified effort. But then oftentimes the company then would be supported financially once they understood what this did.
And does this corporate volunteer system still remain an important part of Meals on Wheels?
Oh, it's the main part of it. Yeah, it's very successful here. And it really wasn't done successfully anywhere else, I don't think.
I'm going to ask you one more question and then wrap it up before we run out of the tape. But much of what you've done in the area of philanthropy is either related to the needs of either women or girls. And I know, for example, that you've worked with the YWCA, Girl Scouts of America, Family Advocacy, Girls Incorporated, Big Sisters, and the list goes on and on. And you're also on the steering committee on the steering committee and board of directors for the Women's Fund, and on the founding committee for Women in Philanthropy Forum. What attracted you to give your time and your energy and your skills to programs that serve the needs of women and girls?
Well, being one, and being an only daughter, growing up on a farm where you didn't have you didn't get to play with friends after school, and the role that women had played in my life, of the different teachers and my female friends, and also I know that women's and girl, female causes are greatly underfunded in comparison with male. So just in terms of the Scouts, the Boy Scouts raise millions of dollars, and the Girl Scouts raise hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, and women traditionally have not given the kind of money that men give. And so I see that there's an opportunity for me to show my leadership skills and begin to try to equalize some of that and say that girls are just as important as boys, you know, and that they have just as many needs and it takes just the same amount of money. And so somebody has to be a champion for that.
Did girls also have needs that might have been separate from or different from those that boys had, that somehow felt the need to?
Oh, no. No, it's just that they're so underfunded compared to boys. Of course, I had, you know, three brothers and two sons and two grandsons. And so I've been surrounded by lots of boys, but it was just the reality that female organizations receive, even from United Way, female organizations receive less money than male.
Why do you suppose that is?
Well, it's a good question. It's tradition.
I mean, you've had a long and productive career, and you've been a woman for a long time. Why do you suppose that's tradition?
Women gave their time and not money. And all these women's organizations I was involved with, they didn't give money. They gave their time and to organize events that raised money. But if you ask them personally to spend $200 on a ticket. These were women that weren't working, the housewife kind of woman. They didn't have $200 to pay for a ticket. If they could put something on a charge card, fine. But they had the grocery money and they had some spending money. But it's a mindset that we're growing out of, you know, because of so many women working. But it was certainly a part of my life and the times that I've been through. Women didn't have their own money to give, but I did.
What was the Women's Fund?
The Women's Fund is an organization here in Indianapolis that was started 6 or 7 years ago to provide additional funding to women to pick up where the traditional funding stops. So it's not instead of United Way funding. But for instance, we raised a few million dollars for the Women's Fund. And we didn't start making grants till I think we had $4 million. And then people apply for grants. So it could be a woman who is trying to finish her college education so she can provide better support to her children. So it doesn't just necessarily go to the Girl Scouts. It might go to a single woman. And so it's to provide this support that isn't forthcoming even yet from lending agencies.
Well, before I run out of tape, I'm going to thank you very much for taking the time to sit with me. It's very interesting.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.